Okay, we're going to pick it up from Daf Ayin Tes on the base. The first of the two Mishnayos. B'shami Omer Pota Adam Ishta Beged Yoshen Uveisilol Osrin. So B'shami say that a person can use an old get in order to get Yoshen. Yoshen is get Yoshen. An old get, and Beisilol say one cannot. What in the world? What is an old get? Basically, get Yoshen. Koshen is Yachet Ima Me'ach Shekos V'la. That he wrote the get, has not yet delivered the get to her, and then the two of them were together at some point afterwards, before the get was actually given. So at first glance, okay, well, what could possibly be wrong with that? We know that in order for a get to take effect, it requires ksiva and a siva. So close bond that the get has not been delivered, they're fully married. So what could possibly be wrong? So that's what the question is going to explain, what the concern is. So Ramai come up with you. What are they arguing about? B'shami sabi lo amrina gizeva shemiyom ukita karem luvna. The reason why the get could be questionable is nothing to do with get and proper. It's really a totally different concern that in the future, people are going to see that she's walking around with a get. They see the date of the get. The get's going to say Rosh Chodesh Nisan. They're going to make an assumption that if the get says Rosh Chodesh Nisan, was probably delivered on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Little do they know that the get wasn't delivered until months later. And the couple were together after that point. The couple have a yichud together, they may have bad relations together, they may have a child, they become pregnant. And now people are going to be snooping around, you know, the gossipers are going to start and say, wait a second, this baby must have been conceived 9 months ago. At 9 months, they were already divorced, because according to the date on the get, so, she was already ready, no longer his wife. We were going to start to spread rumors. Yet was actually delivered before the baby was conceived. Now again, in terms of pure halacha, it's not the end of the world. The child is conceived out of wedlock. It's not a mamzer, but still, it's not exactly the nicest, prettiest thing. And therefore, to prevent this concern, some of the tanaim were concerned. So B'shami wasn't worried about it. B'shami says no one's going to make this cheshbonos calculations, spread this lashon haras. And therefore, Xavier Shem Yom, we're not so concerned. Yes. This is an example of Beisilla Mo Machmer. Yes, it's one of the few examples of Beisilla Mo Machmer. Beisilla Savior meaning Xavier Shem Yom and Kitikar Mutna. And Beisilla said, no, we are very much concerned about that in order to protect the reputation of this potential child. Therefore, Beisilla will say, we'd rather not give the get in the first place. I'm going to be Abba Shmuel. Rabbi Abba said the name of Shmuel, that this get is not really puzzle. You know, think about it, there's nothing wrong with the get proper, nothing really wrong with the get. It's just to prevent problems in the future in terms of reputation of a potential child. Therefore, Shmuel said if she went ahead with the Eved and she got married with this get, we're not going to insist that she gets divorced. Now, normally that law is if a woman gets remarried with an invalid get, if the get is not valid in Atola, then obviously she's still an Eshazish. Even if the get is invalid only with the Rabbanan, sometimes we're going to insist that she really have to get divorced. But here, the get is not even invalid, really. The get is just, it's not usable. It's not, you can't call it an absolute outright puzzle get. And therefore, with the Eved, we're going to not insist that she gets divorced. We could be Amid, and those who say, Amid, Amid, Shmuel, and this guy should us the Chachila. That according to the second version, Shmuel was even more lenient. Not only after the facts that we're not going to insist that she gets divorced again, but if the Eved she got married, even if the Eved this get was given, she can go ahead and get married to Rashi. She says, as long as there's some kind of a tzarech. The husband gave it his get, and he shouldn't have given it to her. We should have written it in one. But he gave it already, and now he went on a voyage somewhere. And after sitting around, wait 6 months, and he comes back. So the get was given, so Zayin was given. So again, this is an example of a get that's not per se possible. It's a get that shouldn't be used, according to the view of Ben Sela, because of these concerns, but it's not an outright possible get.
Is it a
sub-angular? Yeah, it's also, there's a lot of spankings.
So if it's a sub-angular, then would you say
spankam
in this particular circumstance?
Yeah, I don't know. The club was fake spankam. What is called spankam? It's not called spankam. I'm not sure. The Shach writes at the end of the club was fake spankam, there's like 53 different claw in the government's fake spankam. And he says you have to figure all of them out before you apply a spankam. We're not going to do that this morning. In the next 20 minutes, we're not going to finish that. So it comes initially now and gives you other examples of problems in Gittin that are potentially more serious. We know that you have to date a get. We learned about this way back in the second parak. Although in the Torah, there's really no need to put a date on the get. With the Rabbanan, for a variety of reasons, you must date a get. So here they dated the get, but they used as a reference point something that wasn't really correct. You're supposed to date the get according to the malchus, according to the government in that particular location, according to the reign of that particular king. And here they wrote for a malchus in hagenas, a malchus that's not up to par. So I was going to explain who is this malchus not up to par. It's the Roman Empire. So I was going to explain why the Roman Empire was called the malchus in hagenas. So here you're not in the Roman Empire. You're in a different empire. You're in a different kingdom. So you're not supposed to write to the Roman Empire. Well, is your malchus madan? Or if you're living in Persia, now you're writing according to the Medes. The Malchay, unless you live in Achashverosh's day, when he's controlling both, the Malchay, Paras of Madai. But if you're in a different location and you're writing based on a different empire, that's a problem. The Shul Malchus Yavan. Or if you write to the Greek Empire, just that the Greek Empire not, happens not to be around anymore. Well, the Binyan Abayis. Or you date to get to the days and the years of the second Beis HaMikdash that was built. That's also not right. The Chorban Abayis, or if you write it to the how many years since the Chorban. So none of those are supposed to be done. You're supposed to date again according to the government in that area, according to the kingdom in that area. So the Rishonim already have the practice that we, our governments don't care too much. They couldn't care less whether we acknowledge them in our. So we have a standard minhag Yisrael is with Bris Olam. No one can argue. We're not supposed to have a Bris Olam. Therefore, we date our Gittin and our Ksubas, the Bris Olam, Minish of the Mother of God, etc. So, Hayyab of Mizrach, because of Amira. What if a person was in this direction? He was in a certain area in the east, and he writes the wrong location. He writes the west. Or he was in the west, he writes in the east. So, all these examples, he didn't write the proper protocol, either in terms of he wrote the wrong timing of the get, but the wrong dating system. Or he wrote according to the wrong location. So the Mishnah says this get is no good, and the ramifications of the get being no good are very, very serious. If she went ahead and married based on a get that was not acceptable, so now she has to leave both husbands. So this is part of a general picture. We spoke about this a little bit in the past, where if a person gets married with an invalid get, so the repercussions are very, very serious. But she has to leave the second husband, and she has to get divorced now from the first husband as well. We almost view her like a little bit like an Eish Zinsa. So she has to get divorced from both husbands. But she can get mizeh. But she requires a get from both of the husbands. The Eimel Oksuba, and not only does she have to leave both husbands, but she loses a lot of monetary things. So again, where the Gemara said earlier that to a certain degree, this is our fault. I mean, again, it's the fault, obviously, of the Rabban, the young who are not acting appropriately. But the Gemara says that the woman is supposed to be careful. She's supposed to ask. She's supposed to make sure. If she has any questions, she should bring a get. She should find somebody who is responsible. So well, here she's... Yes, a different source. The Hedemir Rabbanim is not going to appear in the Gemara at all. That's something that's way, way, way after the period of the Gemara, because the din of the Gemara, the person can, you know, according to the din deraisa, a man can be married to two women. The whole idea of Hedemir Rabbanim is that since with the Rabbanim, a man is not allowed to be married to two wives, that was the Chemer of Benegeshem. So Benegeshem built into the system that if there's some unbelievable, extenuating circumstance, let's say the woman, is not able to receive again, whatever the case it may be. So the Rabbanim in each generation have the right to sometimes lift the Chayim to Rabbeinu Gershom if they feel that it's absolutely necessary to do that. But Rabbeinu Gershom didn't want it to be done flippantly. Any Tom, Dick, and Harry rabbi was just going to let a man remarry. So he wanted to make sure that there would be 100 Rabbanim who would sign off on this. And the Rabbanim have to be in different places. So you have to give 100 Rabbanim three Medinos. So that's why when you have these very, very, when they're legitimate, Hetemir Rabbanim that are written, so then they're done properly. But there are... illegitimate ones, improperly. So, but again, it's not getting per se. It's in a case to permit the man to be married, to permit the woman to be married, that the marabana would be meaningless.
Are these psalm deraisa?
So these are not real psalm deraisa. That's what the Gemara's going to question. So why are we being so machmer for that? The Gemara's going to talk about a little bit later on.
Could she be married the second guy?
No. So once she was quote unquote was with the second guy, then we treat her like an Eshishinsa basically, and she wouldn't be permitted to. So the Gemara is all kind of different gezeiros rabbanim because people are going to think it looks a little bit like Masi Bishoso, kick back to the first one, and kick back to the second one. So the whole array of different reasons for these chumers. But the bottom line is that there are a lot of chumers that are now thrown at her, including many monetary penalties for what she did. So the Eil of Ksuba, so she's not going to receive a Ksuba for either one of the husbands, below peros, she's not going to receive a fruit. What in the world does a fruit mean? So, as we spoke about in the past, that when a couple gets married, there are a lot of monetary commitments one to another. He has to support her, but then the salary she makes goes to him. He is required to redeem her, to ransom her if she gets kidnapped. And she, in return for that, she has to give some of the fruit that comes from her property to him. So there are a whole array of different kinds of relationships that take place between the two. So basically, Chazal canceled all of these. Most of them are actually in her favor. And therefore, Chazal highlighted that she's not going to get a lot of these reimbursements that a normal woman would get. Below Mazono, she's not going to get supported. Below, if she brought in clothing into the marriage and now the clothing is kind of worn out, so normally, if a couple would get divorced, so then she would get some of the shirayim, some of the leftover stuff, she's going to lose that also. Laws, never laws, that she doesn't get anything from either one of the husbands. If she took anything that she wasn't entitled to, she's required to return it. Now the most strict of all the statements is Vlad Mams and Mizamizet, that would declare that the child from either one of the marriages now is considered to be a mamzer. So depending on what you think about this get, if the get is valid in the Torah, so then she's technically married to the second one. She goes back to the first one, so the child will be a mamzer. If she's not married in the Torah, if she's still married in the Torah, then the second one will be a mamzer in the Torah. So again, it's complicated. Who exactly is the mamzer derived? Is the mamzer derabbanan here? But in either case, we're going to be super machmer in her to put this as all part of the consequence. In the end, the Gemara is going to tone it down a little bit. We don't pass like every line of this Mishnah, but this model of being extra machmer in her, penalizing her for getting married with a get that wasn't valid.
You mean like can't suffix machmer, like only
machmer? I mean, there is a concept of a suffix machmer in Allah, but here we're treating this as that this get was no good. And therefore, we're going to declare with the Rabbanan one of these two people have a sefer mamzerim. It's not like Rashi does. Who exactly is the mamzer derais? Who is the mamzer derabbanan? But somebody is a problem here. I mean, they're both problems. The ma'aseh below zem v'zem b'tamin la. There is a halacha that the Ashes Kohen dies, so the Kohen is normally b'tamin for her. It's not like we showed him why exactly that's so. But the ma'aseh that's the din based on psukim or based on din derabbanan. Whatever the case may be, that the husband usually is b'tamin for his wife. So here we declare that the couple are not really married; that they're not supposed to be married, and therefore he is not a metami bar. And simply, all the regular rules that govern the financial relationship of marriage don't apply here. Normally, a husband gets the matzias; he gets the lost objects. If I find some lost object, the husband has the monetary zchus to it. Here, they did away with that as well. He doesn't get any of the salary that she makes. Below Befar is the Darel, that he has no ability to be made for Hanadarim. Allah is if a married woman takes a neder that interferes with her relationship with her husband. The Torah says in Pashas Matos, he has the option, he has the ability of being made for, of canceling that neder. It's not the same as Hatar Sadar, but Tar Sadar is a regular person makes a neder. They can go to a Beis Din, and then the Beis Din will discuss with them whether retroactively we can undo the net, whether there was some kind of a misunderstanding, sometimes a mistake or something that went into the taking of this net there. That's Hataras Nadar. Where you start Hataras Nadar, Erev Rosh Hashanah, you know, you have to now you have a Slicha, so it's done in a three. So that's not real Hataras Nadar. Real Hataras Nadar means you come to the Beis Din and you actually discuss it, and the Beis Din asks you a lot of questions, and we negotiate. Is it really true? Should it be math? Not be math? And then you know, we have to have a bunch of deliberation, and the Beis Din decides. Erev Rosh Hashanah becomes a little bit on mass, you know, to whatever degree it does or doesn't work. But that's not what this is. How far is it? First of them is a woman takes a neb, their married woman says she's not going to eat any more meat. And the husband hears that. He gets very upset. He says, I want you to eat meat. So it's bad for you not to eat, it's bad for you not to drink wine, whatever the case may be. So he says, Mufar, he says, your neb should be canceled from here on in. So as long as he does it on the day that he hears it, Yom Shamo, he can be made for 100 arm. So here in this case, we view her basically as not being married anymore. So he loses all those rights in the first adar. If this woman in question went ahead and married a second person based on an invalid get, if she was a regular Bas Yisrael, she can no longer marry a Kohen because we treat her basically as being like his owner. The nation's ish has relations with somebody else. So she becomes disqualified from here on into marrying a Kohen. She's going to be his owner. So to over here, whether the get was possible, the rice at the bottom of the case may be, we're treating her as an Ashes Ishes in Sir. Baslavi, the top of that's where I'm paying. Baslavi, Mina Maiser. If she's a Baslavi, so she can no longer eat Maiser Rishon, that was a special penalty that was made to her as well. Or Bas Kohen, if she's a Bas Kohen, Mina Truma, she can't eat Truma Normally, a bas kohen is single, so she, even if she was once married, she doesn't have any children from Israel. She can go back to her father's home and continue to eat truma. That's provided that she didn't have relations with someone she's not permitted to be with. But here in this case, since she was mazana, so that's considered to disqualify her from ever eating truma. And in terms of Hilchos Yerusha, so the Yoshim of either one are not going to be Yorish. This is referring to a special type of Yerusha. Normally the halacha is when a woman dies, so the husband is a Yorisha. So Chazal tell us in Maseches Ksubas that they were a little bit concerned about this halacha, that if a woman dies, so the husband's going to get everything all the time, because that's going to be a little bit of a reason where people are going to be nervous to give property to the daughters when they marry them. Well, if we want to encourage the fathers to give a lot of nice things to the daughters, she should have a lot of property. So the father's going to think a million times, I'm going to give my daughter a field, I'm going to give her a car, and give her a lot of animals. A year later, she's going to die, and everything's going to go to the husband. So they set up a whole system that certain property that's brought into the marriage will be diverted to her children. Even though normally that's not what the halacha should be. That's called Ksubas Bon and Dichrin. Some of the property that she brought into the marriage will be separate from the rest of her property. It's going to go directly in a line to her children, not to another wife's children. And therefore the father's going to feel that's going to at least stay in the family. This will stay to his own grandchildren. So it'll be an incentive to give a little bit more. So those very whole complicated sugya instead of subas. So none of those halachas are going to apply over here, because again, those are parts of regular normal marriage stipulations. And here we're basically saying that this whole marriage wasn't supposed to take place in the first place. Then Yoshin Shazev Yoshin. And if either one of these, quote unquote, two husbands, either the original husband or the new husband, that wasn't supposed to be the new husband, if either one of them die, so then we're still going to require chalitza. We're not going to permit the brothers to do a yibum. So again, these are all the consequences of this big, big mistake, that either it was a mistake in terms of location of the get being identified properly, or the time of the get being identified properly. Then the Mishnah continues with other kinds of examples where bad mistakes were made. It should have been averted, and we're going to penalize the parties involved. So Shina Shmo Ushma. What if not a mistake in the place, but they made a mistake in the names itself? Because they used the wrong name. So that's a big, big problem. That could potentially be a deraistic problem. We spoke about this way, way, way back in the second barrack. That if a mistake is made in the names, very often the thing that takes a lot of time in writing a get is the spelling of names. Because you have to make absolutely certain that the names are properly spelled. It shouldn't give off the impression that they talk about somebody else. Even the nicknames, the names and the nicknames, right? It gets very, very complicated. If you have a guy who's got three nicknames and his father gets six nicknames, and she's got a lot of names in there. And what also makes it very complicated is that very often the names are not Hebrew names. They're English names, they're Yiddish names. They're different languages. So you have to try to spell it properly. So there's a whole body of halachic literature as to how to halachically spell things properly, things that come from other languages. In the back of the Hilchos Gittin, there are pages and pages about the Hilchos Shemos. There are books that are written about just how to identify, how to spell names properly, how to spell names of places properly. Again, there's certain standards in Hilchos Gittin as to what we use. In Ksubas, we have also a similar thing. Ksubas, we don't take as seriously. You know, to be a mistake in Ksuba, it's got to be a lot more blatant. But in Hilchos Gittin, we take this with the utmost seriousness, to a certain lesser degree of Ksubas, in order to make sure that there's no confusion in terms of a Gittin. Sometimes a mistake in the old notes, I remember once I was beside a Kedushin, and I was writing the Ksuba, and I made a mistake. I mean, I realized it right before the chuppah that one of the names was Beirish. I wrote Beinish by mistake. I was careless. I wrote Beinish instead of Beirish. I wasn't listening properly, and I had to rip it up and start over again. So at that time, I made myself the following decision. What happened was I chopped it right at the end of the chosin's tish, and they were starting to daven mincha. I had not yet daven mincha, but I needed about 10 to 15 minutes to just rewrite the ksuba. So I had a miss mincha the tzibu. I had to daven myself quickly right before the chuppah. So at that point, I decided every time I start a kedushin, I daven mincha early. Just that way I have the 15 minute window in case I have to make any corrections before beforehand. And if I don't have to make any, the other advantage, this is off the official record, but the other advantage of that is it gives me 10 minutes to hit the Shabbos board and let everyone else stop me. Don't tell my wife I hit that part to the story. Okay, back to the Mishnah. So, Shinishmo Shma, so if you make a mistake in his name or in her name, or Shaira, Shaira, or if you make a mistake in identifying the city, his city, or our city, so again, those are serious problems. She has to get divorced. So all of the above halachas apply. So instead of the Mishnah delineating again the last 15 things that have to be done. So whatever we said before about losing the ksubah, losing the mezuzah, all these halachas apply in this scenario as well. Then the Mishnah goes on to describe other things that can go wrong in terms of marriage, which have nothing to do with Masechas Gittin. The only reason why they're here is because they are similar in the sense of that a mistake was made. And a little bit of a careless mistake was made, and now we're going to put in all these penalties into place again. All the laws that we mentioned before. So this is a reference to a sugya in Maseches Yevamos. Kol arayin she'amru tzaroseh mutaros. The first Mishnah in Maseches Yevamos tells us that, let's say, if Reuven, like the blackboard for this one, but we'll try to say it outside. If Reuven is married and dies without any children, so then his wife falls for Yibum or Chalitza, the one of the brothers. What if he has two wives? I mean, in the Torah, you have two wives. So then both wives fall for Yibum Chalitza. Both of them, you only do one of them. And in that part, there's the other wife as well. What if one of the women happens to be an Erva to the brother? So Reuven has one brother, Shimon. And it happens to be that one of Reuven's wives happens to be an Erva to Shimon. How could he be? How the one should marry Shimon? Very simple. Reuven marries his niece. So Reuven marries Shimon's daughter. That's perfectly okay. You're allowed to marry your niece. So Reuven marries his niece. So now when he dies, so his wife, Rachel, falls for Yibum to her father. Yibum with her father. It's an Erva. So the first mission of Yibum tells us that there's no Yibum no Chalitza in Rachel. Not only is there no Yibum Chalitza for her, but if he has other wives as well, so as long as one of the wives is an Erva, it's what's called Potros Tzaroseim. The very first mission was said as Yibama says, Chameshus Reynoshim Potros Tzaroseim Ritzaros Tzaroseim and Yibam Echlitza Tzaref Ha'ilam. That if any one of the wives is an Erva, so all the Tzaros go off the go free as well. The mission then delineates the Masechus Yibama Stabez 15 different scenarios. It's complicated. You have 15 scenarios. You can have it. Reuven's married to Shimon's mother-in-law, Reuven's married to Shimon's daughter-in-law, Reuven's married to this one, to that one, Reuven's married to Shimon's half-sister, not Reuven's half-sister, to the mother, all kind of wild, wacky playouts in terms of Yevamos, in order to describe the same halacha. Okay. Remember the year the yeshiva was learning Yevamos was back, I don't know, 10 years ago or so. So we had a Shem Lav Malka in our house, and my wife and my kids decided that we have to play a game. It's not enough just to have a lot of activity to return dance. We have to have play a game. So I thought they were running like a singles event or something. We put together a game. So it has to be a Torah game. We put together a Torah Jeopardy. Different categories of a Jeopardy. So one of the categories was, it's really Yevamos, was, little known facts of a second Yevamos, something like that. So remember, one of the questions was, 200 points was, name all 15 cases of the first Mishnah of Chameshus Reynosh and Panas Torah. So not one bachar can name all 15, and to the embarrassment of the Rebbe, so they asked me afterwards, come on, Rebbe, you can do it. I couldn't get it either. I got about 12, 13 of them. I also fell short in terms of remembering the 15 again. It's your mother's-in-law's daughter's-in-law. I don't remember every single possibility. Granddaughters-in-law, every single possibility. So here the Mishnah, here the Gemara quotes this did and says, what if you have one of these arayas who could potentially part of the tzaros? So call arayas, amu tzaros, amu tzaros. So one of the tzaros, one of the other wives, went in and got married because he just gave. She read the first mishnah. She came to the shay. She came to the Bav Malka. She read the mishnah. She understands that. Oh, one of my co-wives, one of my tzaros, is an heir to the yavam. Great, I'm good to go. So she goes, jumps off, goes, gets married. And now we have a big, big problem. The problem is that erva, the one who was the source of the ptur in the first place, turns out that she was not really a legitimate wife in order to exempt all the other wives. She turned out to be an islandess. An islandess means that she never physically developed properly as a woman. And even though she's technically she's a woman, but she doesn't have the anatomy to have any children whatsoever. It's not just she has some kind of a hormonal issue. She is literally physically, the Gemara describes in Yavamos, that she has simani of her isha never really developed properly. And therefore, the whole marriage was a mekhtal. She was never really married to the husband in the first place. If she was never really married to the husband in the first place, then it turns out she was not one of the wives to part of the other co-wives. So basically what happened is that all the other women who jumped ship, they decided they were free to get married, were never really free to get married. And now it turns out they were all Yavam L'shuks. So they all violated the Pasuk in Chumash of Yavam L'shuk. So the Mishnah says, Taitini Zemuzeh, Kol Adrach Ve'iluba. So also they have to go out, they have to get divorced after the new husbands, and all these halachas apply to them. So here the Gemara speaks about this earlier on, about whose fault was this exactly? So the Gemara says it was a little bit of negligence here, that there should have been a little bit more deliberation, a little more questioning. Being an islandess doesn't happen all of a sudden in a vacuum. It means that somebody should have been asked to determine. We don't just let Yavam L'shuk just get married because she read a Mishnah in Yavam L'shabeis. And therefore, we consider that hard to be a little bit at fault as well. So then the Mishnah gives other examples that could potentially happen. Hakenis says Yavimto. What if a person marries his Yavama? The Holcha Tzara. So then the Tzara goes free. And he says the Acher. And then it turns out that the one who had the Yibum was an Islandess. The Vaita, the same problem. She was never really married. Yes, these are all examples of cases where there was a little bit of carelessness here. So to prevent this kind of carelessness, so Chazal said, these are all incentives. These are all penalties to make sure that these things don't happen in the future. These are a little tough. They're considered to be educational penalties. They remind me of, I told them the story years ago when I was learning in Kerbi Avnus. I was once walking on the street in Yerushalayim by King George in Yafo. And so I crossed, even though there was a red light, I grew up in New York, so I didn't understand that concept. So I crossed, there were no cars. So I crossed the street. So there was a policeman who pulls me over for walking. He says, he's writing me a ticket. I don't know what he was talking about. He said, yeah, there's a red light. Not allowed to cross against the red light. So he gave me a ticket for like 4 shekels, whatever it was. So I remember his words. He said to me, it's a knas chinuchi. This is an educational fine. He said, this is to remind you. So I've always said that at work, I have never, ever crossed at a red light at that corner of Yafo. I get there, I start to shake. Every time I get there, I tell my kids the same story. That corner, I never crossed. Nope, that corner, I never crossed. Knas chinuchi. That's what the Mishnah is also. Knas chinuchi. We want to come down a little bit hard to encourage people to do their due diligence, not to end up violating these Yisroel. Hopefully that's your next time. So we'll continue with the long Mishnah. We'll try to continue the next part of the Mishnah, other examples of these Knas chinuchi as well.
Nowadays, they
yes. 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 Yes.